The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. 3 minutes past, beg your pardon, we'll stop that in the background here. 3 minutes past nine on this Wednesday, 8th of July, 2026. You're very welcome along to the programme. It's good to have you on board on this beautiful sunny day across the northwest. Excuse me, across the northwest of Ireland. Are you listening? I don't know. Do people disappear and not listen when the sun's out? I'm not quite sure. Maybe you're all at the beach. No, you're not. You're going to be listening, aren't you? And we've got lots coming up, including our gardening slot. We're going to be in the garden. So maybe you have a question as it relates to your lawn, if you're lucky enough to have one, your bedding, your roses, your hedging, your indoor plants, your balcony plants, whatever it might be, wherever you try and get a little bit or want to get a little bit of green into your life, Paul will be in with us later on. And the contact numbers for questions for him and anything else that you want to talk about, 086 60 25000. That's the WhatsApp and text number. Or give us a call on 074 91 25000 or email comments at highlandradio.com. The Finn Valley Voice out this morning. If those stones could only speak is the lament of many historians confronted with some ancient but silent edifice. It's also been the lament of visitors to the Twin Towns, or indeed most of its long-term residents. Those towns are packed with history. If only the stones can speak. And now they can. And if you want to find out more, you can read at the front of and inside that paper. On to the Nationals now. And an asylum seeker was on the run last night after a mother was beaten to death in her own home. This is from the Daily Star. The paper has learned that the Middle Eastern suspect is now being hunted over the brutal murder of County Kerry in County Kerry yesterday of the American-born mum of one who had lived in Killarney for the past 5 years. She was named locally as Jamie Carney, the mother to a 13-year-old girl. Gardaí are to launch a murder inquiry as early as this morning. The asylum seeker suspect, who was known to Ms. Carney, previously lived in France, and there were fears last night that he may now try to flee Ireland after the killing. There is a major search for him, as told the paper last night. The paper has learned that the suspect, who's in his 20s, has been living at an iPass centre in Killarney, but knew Miss Carney and occasionally stayed at her house in the Muckross Road area of the town where her body was found yesterday afternoon. And he's believed to have been living in Ireland since the middle of 2024 and was an applicant for international protection. So according to the newspaper, the efforts now by the authorities is to ensure he doesn't leave the country and is held to justice there. In the Irish Independent this morning, RSA chiefs to highlight rise in population as a factor in road deaths. Now, a lot of people have different points of view on the Road Safety Authority. If this is their take on why we're seeing more road deaths, I would have my concerns. But anyway, the Road Safety Authority is expected to point to the increase in population as one of the reasons for a rise in road deaths. Politicians now want to know whether the organisation is up to the task of tackling road safety after the government decided not to split it in two. Seven people have lost their lives on Irish roads since Saturday, bringing the total number of fatalities this year to 93, 11 more than the same period last year. So Dublin, Donegal, Cork and Louth have seen the highest number of fatalities this year to date, while 4 in 10 fatalities happened on Saturday or Sunday, and almost half of all weekend fatalities happened between the hours of 8 p.m. and 6 a.m. Those are the important statistics. I would have my concerns, and it depends how much weight they put on the increased population, and I'll tell you for the reason why. I just hope they're not putting the blame elsewhere. So I was looking at some of the figures just before I came on air. So we have seen a surge in the population, but it's an urban surge. I know you out there will say Donegal has a lot of people that have moved to this county, and that is not inaccurate, but I'm looking at it across the country. Urban areas, the population has grown by 10% in recent times, an increase of 300,000 people. Satellite towns, independent urban towns are also seeing huge increases. There's been just a 5.8% increase in rural Ireland. And if the truth is known, one of the problems we have in rural Ireland is static population, a population stagnation. And indeed, a decline. So if you look at where the crashes are happening, 70% of deaths historically and continue through recent spikes. 7 out of 10 fatal collisions are on rural roads. So the vast majority of these occur on regional and local roads, often narrow, on little winding R and L roads rather than major well-engineered motorways where most of the inbound population is going. And 54% of collisions, believe it or not, are single vehicle collisions. So that means a car leaves the road, flips or hits a ditch or a tree. So my concern with the RSA, and I'm sure there are TDs that will pull them up on it, if they put too much weight into this population growth, I think they're trying to use, or potentially could be used, using a blanket countrywide population growth as a primary explanation, or one of the explanations for a rise in deaths, but ignores the massive geographical disconnect, and the areas experiencing the population surge are not the areas per se experiencing the surge in fatal crashes. So my point is this is a very, very important issue, and I hope those that have questions for the RSA would scrutinise the logic behind them linking the increase in deaths to a growing population. I mean, as that population grows, our cars are getting more safe and so on and so forth. I don't know what you think of that, but anyway, let me know. Interesting story in Britain. Nigel Farage, she's part of that clique of people. Nigel Farage, Donald Trump, Elon Musk and others, they're all part of a network of friends. Well, he's facing massive scrutiny in Britain over his finances. And it does seem to be that you have to have certain political views to be corrupt. It's not exclusive to that. But anyway, Nigel Farage's main political rivals have said they will boycott the fake by-election for the Reform UK leader. He called it for his parliamentary seat in Clacton. Labour Reform's populist right rival Restore Britain and the Tories, who previously held Clacton, all suggested they would instead contest a future by-election that could be forced if a parliamentary investigation fined against Farage in a donations row. Now, Farage is under investigation by the UK's Parliamentary Standards Commission over an undeclared £5 million gift from cryptocurrency entrepreneur Christopher Harborne. In a televised address yesterday, Farage also suggested he expected to face an investigation over undeclared donations from convicted fraudster George Cotterill, which were revealed at the weekend. So what his plan was, and this is what he said in his statement, which it can still be twisted in his favour, but what his plan was to say that, right, this is a political witch hunt. I'm going to resign my seat, call a by-election. I'll stand against Labour, the Tories, the Greens, all those other parties, and you, the public in Clacton, will have your say. So it's going to be me versus the establishment. But the establishment says we're not playing your game. So the only rival candidate he has at the moment is a guy that wears a dustbin on his head. That's it. Now, you could say the establishment have come together and refused to stand against him. But it does mean that he could be standing alone in this by-election against a dustbin, which is not necessarily the win he thought it was going to be. And I could see where he was going with that, but I think it's backfired. Someone messaged in yesterday about how there was a story involving the Galway mayor, and I wasn't familiar with it at all, but it's covered quite extensively in the papers today. Galway mayor Helen Ogbu shared a story repeating the false claim she came to Ireland in 2005 after her husband's murder at least a month before it appeared as a typo on her website. Labour has repeatedly responded to queries about the erroneous claim by insisting a mistake was inadvertently made on the website, which Ms. Ogbu and the party only recently became aware of. The website had claimed in 2006, "My family and I," Ms. Ogbu, "moved to Ireland seeking safety and a fresh start after the tragic loss of my husband." However, Ms. Ogbu's husband was murdered in Nigeria in 2010, not 2006. And she came to Ireland in 2005 and not 2006. And it has now emerged that Ms. Ogbu shared a news report from Channels Television, a Nigerian news outlet, on February 11th, 2025, at least a month before her website went live. The report, which was shared on Ms. Ogbu's own personal YouTube channel, said the 51-year-old fled to Ireland in 2005 after her husband was murdered. And the Irish Daily Mail asked the Labour Party if it was aware of who provided the Nigerian news outlet with this false information. In response, a spokeswoman for the party said, "You would need to ask Channel TV Nigeria where they sourced their information from." In the wider scale of things, I don't know, but some people might think that is a bigger deal than it is. Irish householders are paying a very high price as data centres guzzle nearly a quarter of the country's electricity. 25% of all the power generated goes to data centres. Now, if the truth be told, it's been a marginal increase year on year. It only went up by 1%. So it's not, there is an upward trend, but it's not like skyrocketing and chewing into all the supply that's out there. But official figures show the power-sapping tech hubs consumed 23% of all metered electricity in Ireland last year, a jump from 5% in 2015. Of course, if you want to go back that far, you will see a dramatic increase, but year on year it's not quite. The explosion in energy demand means data centres now consume more electricity than all of Ireland's urban homes combined. So while urban dwellers accounted for 22% of electricity last year, data centres have surged past them. When rural homes are included, Irish houses make up 27% of total demand. I don't know what to do with that information. I'll just be honest with you. I just think it's quite interesting. And good news for you this morning, if you are a Patrick Kilty fan. He is the presenter of The Late Late Show and will continue to be so. Patrick Kilty says it's a joy and a privilege to host The Late Late Show after agreeing a deal to front it for a further 3 years. And the County Down star can't wait to be back on screens in September after finally signing the new contract with RTE. Kilty, who's 53, has been involved in a standoff with Montrose Chiefs and ended the last series in May with no agreement in place. He was out of contract and they had to negotiate a new contract. But you have the pleasure of his company on a Friday night now for the next 3 years. We say good morning now to Councillor Michael McLafferty. Thanks for joining us, Michael.
Morning, Greg. Morning, listeners. Thank you.
Good to have you with us. Right, getting contacts on a daily now in relation to overgrown hedges, hedges encroaching on roads, dangerous for locals using the roads, people out walking, etc. But also it seems to be interfering with, you know, larger vehicles going around their day-to-day business. What is the story with our hedgerows and responsibility?
Basically, Greg, the story is what our hedgerows is. Historically, what's happening here at the minute, there's a lot of laneways, a lot of roads, so on, etc., particularly back roads, obviously some main roads here as well, and secondary roads, that basically for a number of years now and so on, the hedges, the trees, so on, etc., have not been cut, have not been maintained. And now, again, in the summertime here, with the fresh growth that everybody knows, everything's expanding several inches every summer, and maybe a bit longer, to be fair. But it's encroaching now onto roads. But the reality is, Greg, here, the responsibility lies mostly with the landowner. That is the reality of it. If you or I have trees encroaching onto the road causing a problem, it's up to me, it's up to you to deal with them, to sort them out.
Like, is that is officially the situation, is it? I mean, are you saying that it should be because I own the hedges and it's my hedges that are going onto the road? Or am I obliged to cut those hedges back on paper?
You are obliged, Greg, to deal with them and maintain them. That is the reality of it. I know people are saying as well, people are complaining as well, it's out of hedge cutting season, because obviously we're not in the hedge cutting season until we get to the end of August there. So it's for September again is the right time again if you're staying in line with the birds' nests and so on, etc. However, Greg, there is room there on safety measures that you can go and trim them, you can go and cut them back as such. For example, if they're breaking mirrors, scratching vehicles, as you said to yourself, causing difficulty for people walking and so on, there's nothing stopping anybody, there's nothing in the rule book saying that you can't go and do that, particularly if your area, your road frontage, your field frontage, whatever the case may be, is causing a problem.
But I'm not being smart. That's like me saying to one of the boys, you know, there's nothing stopping you from emptying the dishwasher. They would just say, oh, that's okay, but I'm not doing it. You know, like, what the public want to know is, what are the rules? Who should be doing what and when?
Well, the rules are, Greg. Like I said, going back to the game, I know you're not being smart. I take your point. But the reality is, it is on the landowner to deal with their own hedge, the road frontage. That's the only rule I have on it. Like, that's all I can say. For example, around here where I live here in the Glentish MD, and obviously where myself and my five colleagues are from Crystal Cardra, we cover that area, the six of us. The reality is, when it comes around to the time, the County Council have done now for a number of years, and has worked in many cases. There are some cases, to be fair, maybe three or four of them, edging closer to the court if they're not going to play ball as such. But the vast majority of people are complaining once either the foreman or the manager of the day goes and knocks on the door and says, look, sorry, Mr. Ma'am, sir, you have a problem here with your hedge. You need to cut it back. They generally go and do that.
So the So I just want to be absolutely clear, as much as both you and I know. So
yes,
you can't cut hedges until the end of August now, but you can. There is provision for you to cut them if it's a road safety issue. So who's determining that? Is the council going out and enforcing hedge cutting at this time of year with landowners? Because whilst they can, of course, there doesn't seem to be an obligation on them to do so, because they could simply say, could they not, that, well, you know, is there a road safety risk? Are you determining that? Can the local authority determine that? I don't believe there is. I'm not cutting my hedge till September. Do you know what I mean? So what is there a hard and fast system in place that enforces the control of hedges during non-hedge cutting season in this county?
There's no hard and fast rule that I'm aware of, Greg, in place at the moment. The only rule, the hard and fast rule that is there at the minute, as I say, there is a number of people edging closer to the court, and obviously that takes time, so that could be tomorrow, next week, next year, who knows when that would happen. But when people get stubborn, that's the reality there. Now, I do know our next roads meeting now is supposed to, timely enough, the way it's falling, in September. And I do know from our previous one there a couple of months ago that there is a lot of calls to, probably it's going to come up again in the September meeting, just basically for the council to carry on, cut the hedges, wherever they're problematic, just cut them regardless, and just go then to the householder, send the householder a bill then and say, look, you ran up a bill or whatever, a couple of hundred euro or more, we cut your hedges on your behalf, we want you to pay it, and it's going to go from there. I also know as well, now I must stress the fact, we have not said this in Donegal County Council, but it has been said elsewhere outside of our county, that the way they are looking at it there is to take it as source. Others have mentioned as well, other councillors have mentioned as well, of which I don't agree with, try and put on some kind of fine on everybody. I can only imagine.
But just to see, what is not clear to me, Michael, is who's responsible for it, right? So I know the landowner's responsible for not creating an obstruction on the road. So,
yes,
you know, an obstruction on the road, the hedge would need to be, who's determining that? Because Donegal County Council aren't the road safety authority as such, okay? So who would actually make a determination that a hedge is causing a danger on the roads and must need to be cut back? Maybe the council has that legal power.
Well, Greg, I would say, alongside the council doing it, it's up to any of ourselves. I mean, if you or I are walking down the road and you can't walk down that road safely without you being, whatever, pushed out to, for a better word, to the centre of the road, because their hedge is hanging out 2 foot out on either side. Like, so immediately at that point, you're losing 4 foot, if you like. That's the reality here, Greg. So, I mean, it's down vastly down to ourselves, the general public.
But the council does cut some hedges, you see. This is what confuses me. And I don't feel I'm any further on, and it's not your fault because it's quite a complicated area. But the council do cut some hedges. So why are they cutting some hedges and it's, you know, seemingly up to the local, it's up to the landowner to cut other hedges. You know, we all know when the council go out and cut hedges, Michael, so they are choosing to do some of it.
Generally, Greg, there's a test done every year for all MDs, as far as you understand, along our national road or N56 or whatever it may be in reference to the national road, depending where you live on, so on, etc. There is a certain allocation every year comes from Dublin, from the government for that, and that is utilised throughout our five MDs to the best of the manager's ability, the road engineer's ability at the time. To do that. Other times people will question as well when they see the council up this road or that road, a side road, whatever, cutting the hedges, but they'll find when they're up that side road or that back road, whatever the case may be, that's generally a road that's due to be tarred around that time, and that's why that's done. And it's done for the reason of the safety and everything else of the workers of the vehicles, so they're not breaking mirrors, they're not scratching paintwork, so on, etc. That's what that is done for, Greg.
Yeah. So again, this is where it feels complicated to me. So say I am a landowner, which I'm not, and I have hedges going out onto the road, which I don't. So I can't really cut those hedges at this time of year. There's a ban on it. So I'm like going, well, I don't want to cut those hedges because I don't want to get into trouble for cutting hedges and have the wildlife crew on my back. Then someone, then someone says, yeah, well, I'm of the opinion that your hedges are out onto the road. So how do I know if I cut those hedges, I won't get into bother with wildlife and, you know, et cetera. And it's just too complicated. We need a more simple system.
To fair with any of these situations that I'm involved in or have come across, there's generally a lead-in time, a build-up to it. It doesn't just... I respect the point you're saying and asking.
But you could get a stretch of road with 15, 20 landowners on it.
You know, it may well be, Greg, but this, again, is back to the problem again. If there is a 15, 20 landowners, that's my what I'm saying. Like, the people need to go together themselves at the time to get a hedge cutter of their choice and pay in so much a house to get it done.
Okay.
If the road's been maintained, if your hedge, you know, and your trees have been maintained every year, as it should be, Greg, there's generally there should be no problem. Like, that's the reality of it. It's like cutting your lawn. If you cut your lawn every couple of weeks, you're not going to end up with a forest 6 foot high at the end of it, and that is the reality of it. Like,
yeah,
and it's no different to the hedges. If the hedges are maintained every year, Greg, there should be no problems.
Right, so what do you think when it comes up to the next road meeting? Because you're talking about what you think and want, and many people listening would agree with you. You're not saying anything controversial at all, but we're still at the point whereby in some places bin lorries aren't going up roads. In some cases, you know, it's become increasingly dangerous for people to just travel into from their home. So it not what we want. How can we achieve safer roads at this time of year? What do you believe? What will you be calling on the council to do? Because appealing to landowners is not working. Right, we would agree on that. So, some cases it is, but it's not. So,
in some cases,
so in terms of actually genuinely finding a solution, what do you propose?
Well, what we propose is what we have been edging towards all year and probably last year too. There needs to be, as you say yourself, there needs to be a hard and fast, clear rule put out there, a policy put in place. There needs to be a proper policy, copper fast policy put in place. That there's no arguing what that is at. There is no arguing. There's no grey area. This is what you do. And hopefully we can move on from that. That'll be my wish list on it anyway, to be fair, Greg. Mm-hmm. It's also worthwhile, Greg, to point out as well, in the past, what has happened here as well, the council as well and past times have actually sent a hedge cutter to a certain area as well. Of a problematic road as such. And once the hedge cutter got there, the owner along that road didn't want the hedges been cut.
See, that's my point.
The hedge cutter says, I'm only doing my job, I was only sent here. So the next thing, the owner reached to the driver and pulled him out of the tractor. Like.
Yeah.
So when this kind of crazy mass stuff...
That's what I'm on about. This is the ambiguity.
Well,
that's exactly the ambiguity I was talking about.
This is the kind of madness goes on. Like.
Yeah, that doesn't get us any closer to cutting hedges, though, you see. That's just another example as to why it's complicated.
Greg, it's clearly it's not it, it is complicated. Yes, I agree, and it's not straightforward, particularly if people dig in the heels and they don't want their hedges cut. But that's as they all is left for those people then is obviously to go down the judicial road to such thing. That's the only thing you have then, like for that. But as I say, thankfully, the vast majority of people do it. As I've said to people as well, times if you're cutting your own hedges. And Mary or Paddy or Joe down the road, so we've been, you know, well on their years into the senior years, just do the neighbourly thing and send down the hedge cutter for half an hour and give them a hand out and just, you know, do them a favour. Like, you know, yeah. If we all move a wee bit, it can help a lot too, like, Greg, to
of
be
course,
fair. Like.
Yes, but I don't think we're going to, and I don't think we're really any further on in getting to the bottom of all of this. Because we all seemingly recognise the complications and the issues and there's no simple solution to any of it, which is neither your fault nor mine, just a reality. Councillor Michael yeah. McClafferty, thank you very much indeed for your time. Okay, I don't know. I'm a coach driver. And even when the hedges are cut back, they're not cut high enough. Our mirrors on coach lorries, etc., still hit the high branches. Yeah, that's... another factor, isn't it, that we need to consider? And it's the bigger vehicles that are having the biggest issues. How come the COCO seem to cut the hedges on certain lands within these times? Firstly, you can. I think, really, when they talk about protecting hedgerows at this time of year, they're probably talking about internal ones on fields rather than ones that are adjacent to roads, because they can be and probably should be cut back because... a human safety trumps that of a nesting bird. Perhaps controversial to say, but I think it's the case. Maybe it's going to have to happen or will happen whereby overgrown hedges are seen as a contributing factor in a road traffic collision or damage to a vehicle and cases are taken, and then we'll see where we go from there. I suspect that would lead us down the rabbit hole of truly testing who is responsible. Is it the TII? Is it the council? Is it the landowner? Who is it? I don't know. Anyway, sorry, I was hoping for more clarity, but as Michael McClafferty said, you know, he can only relate the facts out there. It is complicated. Now, obviously, Letterkenny, Ballybofey, Snawler, and others are waiting with bated breath for the 10T road scheme. It is progressing through the planning process, it has to be said. But obviously, it is encroaching on people's land, and there are properties that are going to be lost as a result of it. Landowners at an IFA, recent IFA meeting in Letterkenny, were briefed on what the situation is with the 10T Roads project. Joe Sweeney's chair of the Irish Farmers Association in Donegal. Joe, was this a meeting specifically on this topic or just formed part of the conversation?
No, it was mainly to do with the 10T, Greg. It was also covered the greenways, which is coming up as well. There's probably seven greenways earmarked for the county, but a lot of it was on the 10T. That meeting started at 10 o'clock and it finished about 3:30 or 4:00 on a Monday.
475 property owners are to be affected by this right across the county or over the routes of the 10T. Was there a lot of people at the meeting? And I suppose what was the mood at the meeting? Were they looking for information or what?
No, there was a fair crowd at the meeting. It was all about looking for information. Now they would have all had contact from council already. Maybe one or two didn't because they didn't answer or didn't respond to requests from council, but everyone else has. But what they've done since, I'm not so sure. We did have people that said we got letters and did little or nothing about it, and there's people that didn't have a consultant or someone employed or made contact with them to look about going to meet to get an agreement, because like all these projects are great and it's great to see the 10T. It's much needed, but it also comes at a cost certainly to landowners and property owners, because it does impact their life and their livelihood. And they were just there just to get that information and see what was the best way around it or what's the best way they can move forward.
And what is your advice to the farming community affected by this, Joe? I mean, it's about engagement, isn't it, and seeking proper advice. So what have we learned from elsewhere in the country or county, for that matter, that makes that that advice so important?
Well, there's probably no point in sitting back and thinking it's going to go away. It's not going to go away. It's going to happen. And the best thing to do is to seek help or to seek consultants or someone that you know that has experience in negotiating and working with CPOs already to work on your behalf, because it's not a case of one fits all. Like there's going to be different land parcels, different land types. There's going to be different values on land. There's going to be different farm enterprises that's going to have bigger effects. So the compensation will be different.
Yeah, and the landowner knows that best. The landowner can't presume the council's going to, or the country for that matter, is going to give them the best deal. They need to sort of assess all of that and have their paperwork work in order for when it comes to a point where a value will be determined, you know, and that's the type of spade work you need to be doing now.
Yeah, that's exactly it, Greg. They have to fight for their own case, like, to be honest, because it's not a case of it's going to be the same for everyone.
Did you get any sense from the meeting? Sorry, Joe, I thought you were finished. My apologies.
Go ahead. No,
I was
going to
say, did you get any sense from the meeting of any organised resistance to this project, or are landowners of the view that, you know, this is coming down the line and it's about maximising the best value for the inconvenience or loss of land?
No, there's like, all right, you'll get landowners that are annoyed. You know, why is it my land and not his land or whatever? And that happens. It's just like the council would have all that work done, and you know it's stuff that, you know, I wouldn't be overly familiar with land, with road gradients and slopes and whatever. They have all that work done and the safety end of it, but there is people that are still, you know. Do I have to go this way? Could it not go that way, or whatever? And there will be small bits and pieces that may go back to council to look at. But I don't think I can't see anything too serious. Yeah, there is complaints and there is bits and pieces where we have to go back to look at again.
But nothing above what you'd expect with a project of this scale, really.
No.
And finally, that haven't engaged with the IFA, Joe, you're encouraging them to do so, right?
They can engage with the IFA or they can engage with a private consultant themselves. It doesn't matter, because some of the people, they're not all IFA members. But whoever is affected, should it be land, should it be property, should it be whatever dwellings, look. Go and seek advice somewhere and employ someone to work on your behalf. Don't go on there just on your own, because you're not going to get what you should get.
All right, good advice.
Like there's deals to be done, and there's valuations, and it doesn't matter like what you think. Like the IFA negotiated an agreement with the Transport Infrastructure Ireland back in December 23, and it runs to 27. And in that there, they have an agreement that there's also a goodwill payment built in of $6,500 per acre on top of any compensation. And if there was farm buildings or any of that to be removed, or dwellings, that it would be replaced, old.
Yeah, I got you. Okay.
Yeah.
Joe, before I let you go, we've been speaking about hedge cutting in the first part of this programme, and the default is it's up to landowners to cut the hedges, and the council should force landowners to cut the hedges, and there should be enforcement. Now, many of those hedges are owned by members of your association. maybe there isn't a conversation happening with the farming community about this, but is there a particular view amongst farmers about the responsibility of this or any dispute with the council in relation to it? Because I'm just conscious that it's always coming down to whoever owns the land should cut the hedges, whoever owns the land should cut the hedges, and some of that's going to be farming. Is there any conversation about within the association or its members or...
Well, we would always encourage the landowners to keep an eye on hedges. Mm. This time of the year, they can be cut back. Sometimes it can be missed because the deadline is the 28th of February, and then the bird nesting season starts. Some of them hedges come out, especially at busy junctions. And I did see before, like, having to look... To get sort of permission at an odd busy junction just to face back just the leaves where there would be no bird nesting, but not to cut the hedge, you know, and just to dress up the front of it to access or whatever for view to get out for cars or traffic. But it's always contentious this time of the year. But probably if they were done right earlier on the springtime, it wouldn't be so bad.
But do farmers be nervous? Do you know of sort of properly cutting them back on rural roads for fear of getting into trouble for because of wildlife concerns or?
Oh yeah, 100% they are, because there have been cases where they've been like. The Gardaí and Iving were called to people cutting hedges, and you know it's just sometimes it's local politics, it's local people, and the law is the law, and someone else is trying to do something and someone else just.
Yeah. No, it's as complicated as I thought it was going to be, Joe. Listen, sorry for thrusting that one on you. Yeah. I appreciate your time. Have a good day. Joe Sweeney, Chair of the Irish Farmers Association. Now, a one-year investigation led by Journalists Consortium Investigate Europe and involving the Irish Times and media outlets across 13 other countries has found that international gambling company Soft2Bet received hundreds of millions of euro from the profits of unlicensed gambling platforms. Senior investigative reporter with the Irish Times newspaper, Mark Tighe, joins us now. Huge piece of work this, Mark. Good morning to you. And I suppose, in your words, summarise the findings.
Yeah, thanks. So this is... What we did is we got access to internal documents from this company, Soft2Bet. Most people mightn't have heard of it, but if they're ever been gambling online, they've probably seen ads for some of their betting sites. Bettina would be one of the better known ones they use. Diego Simeone, the Atletico Madrid, the Argentinian football manager, is one of their brand ambassadors. And what we've been able to establish from these internal leaks, and we've done interviews with Soft2Bet staff, is that they've had these network of black market gambling sites that aren't regulated or licensed across Europe. And these sites have been illegally taking bets from European gamblers. And then we were able to track where the profits of these illegal gambling sites were going. And they were ending back up in Soft2Bet, this company, which is based between Cyprus and Malta and run by this millionaire, an Israeli-Ukrainian millionaire, Yuri Polyevich. And what was really interesting from an Irish angle is that Dublin is home to six companies which have Irish gambling licenses. And also in Dublin, two of the companies we were able to find were owned and controlled by Soft2Bet were channeling the funds, are being used to channel some of the profits and customer lodgements from these illegal gambling sites, and they're actually owned by Soft2Bet as well.
Why would a company of that scale, probably already raking it in, be doing business with in the unlicensed space, I suppose, Mark?
Well, in the unlicensed space, it's so much easier to make profits, and you know it's so much easier to target problem gamblers. One of the sites that we focused on and were able to establish is owned by Soft2Bet as a website called Only Spins, kind of a variation on OnlyFans, and it uses kind of pornographic content, real models and AI avatars of women. You know, and we talked to staff about this. They're saying this is a new development that we're you know, they're really targeting young men. This is, you know, attractive looking women who take off their clothes, and also the other vice is gambling. So you have the two of these kind of things attracted to young men on the same website, and there's no age verification. Like, if I sign up for Paddy Power this morning, or Boyle Sports, or any of the regulated gambling sites, you know, I'll have to do an age verification check. I'll have to send in a copy of my passport or my driver's license, or both, so they can verify that I'm over 18. But I was able to sign up for this OnlySpins website, you know, which includes pornographic content and gambling. You can bet on football matches, you can do slot machines. And we found from talking to and seeing some of the internal communications, they actually target problem gamblers. So if you say to them, look, I want to close my account, instead of saying, oh, yes, of course, it's their problem, we'll close your account, you know, you're betting too much. But in the case of these gambling websites, they'll actually send you more offers and offer you kind of free bets or free spins on their various games. So they're actually targeting customers and people who have problem gambling issues. And what was interesting was the companies that are processing the payments for some of these websites, like OnlySpins, are actually centred in Dublin.
Wow. What might the consequences of this be? Like, could this bring into question the licensed element of Soft2Bet? Is it European-wide legislation that might be needed to tighten up or to be tightened up, Mark?
Yeah, that's a good question, because it's one of the things, like, the EU has a lot of powers in a lot of different areas, but what it hasn't taken any kind of control of is gambling. It's left at the licensing of gambling sites and, you know, to each country's own powers and their own national parliaments. So even though these entities, you know, which are deliberately targeting all these different jurisdictions, you know, hundreds of different websites, different variations for different markets and jurisdictions, it's up to each country to do its own regulation. So there is no proper EU regulation. So in Ireland, we've had very lax gambling legislation. Like in the case of these sites that were, or the companies approved for gambling licenses, remote gambling licenses in Ireland, it was a mix between the Department of Justice and Revenue, which issued the licenses. And there was very cursory checks on who were the entities or who were the people behind those sites. So in other jurisdictions, like in France or Poland, they operate these kind of blocking lists. You know, if sites are not licensed, they can actually block them and, you know, prohibit those sites being accessed. You know, their IP addresses are actually blocked in the jurisdiction. In Ireland, we haven't done that. Now, there is a new gambling regulatory authority of Ireland, the GRAI. It's just been established back in February of this year. They started issuing licenses last week, July 1st. And they told us, you know, they have much more stricter licensing regime, they do much more thorough examinations of what an entity is, who are their partners, of the corporate structure. So at the moment, you know, we know that Soft2Bet had three applications in with the GRAI for new licenses, and they haven't been issued with any licenses. So it'll be interesting to see. The GRAI can also go to the High Court, seek blocking orders and create these blocking lists that exist in other jurisdictions. So it'll be interesting to see how the new regulator used its powers, which are, you know, much more impressive and much more thorough than what would have existed previously.
And finally, obviously, a company like Soft2Bet has a database of people that have signed up to its licensed services. And you talked earlier on about maybe problem gamblers being targeted. Sort of. So would it be blanket pushing out information to all of the names on the list and catch those problem gamblers? Or were you able to determine if they actually have a database specifically targeting maybe young men and problem gamblers for these unlicensed or perhaps, you know, more questionable services? So are they stripping out vulnerable users and targeting them specifically?
Yeah, we got information both, you know, having spoken to some whistleblowers ourselves and seeing internal communications, that there was a commercial decision made in Soft2Bet to go after accounts that had closed down for various issues, including that they had problem gambling issues. You know, when I signed up for these sites or some of these sites, it was remarkable, kind of the pressing, the pushing, you know, the amount of text and emails was daily. Even there was one website I signed up for called Spinzy, which had been promoted on the Irish Sun website. And within about 4 minutes of me registering, putting in my real phone number, I got a phone call from a lady with an American accent. And it was only after a couple of minutes, I thought her elocution, her accent was too perfect. I asked her, you know, was she a real person? And she said, oh, I'm a friendly AI bot. Wow. So they have, it's not even that they're evolving all the time. Like when people we spoke to worked there last year, but even from then they've moved on now and deployed AI technology and very realistic sounding bots making these phone calls, you know, putting the pressure on you to make a deposit of at least €20 and you'll get all these different bonuses. So it's a very sophisticated operation that they're moving. And so just to, from the softy point of view, we did approach them. We have asked them questions. They said that we have misunderstood their corporate structure. And they also said that, you know, they strive to meet all the regulatory requirements in every jurisdiction that they act in. But, you know, we would very much question that given the what we've been able to reveal today in the Irish Times, you know, which is a very thorough investigation and across 14, 15 other countries today, which has been published with our investigative partners.
Yeah, check out the website, the Irish Times, or get your physical copy in your newsagents. Mark, thanks so much for your time. Mark Tyer there, senior investigative reporter with the Irish Times newspaper. The council needs to cut out the dual carriageway grass. It's like a silage field. The junction is very bad. Well, by putting grass in these places and trees up the middle of the four lanes, you're creating work for yourself, aren't you? Re-hedge cutting, ban hedges from along roadsides, perhaps set up a new government department, hedge-free zone department, no beating about the bush. Yeah, indeed. There's junctions with bad visibility, and it's all due to not trimming back hedges, weeds and grasses. To me, that's up to the council. Is it not about safety? Plus, I think the farmers that have hedges along main roads that's overgrown should all be cut back. They should, but I mean, Joe pointed to it. You could have a family with split land that don't get on, and one will cut the hedge and you couldn't go near the other one's hedge, or they could give out that you cut some of their hedge. It's complicated. That's why it needs to be probably removed from that. You know, the landowner should do it. And you also heard from Joe there from the IFA. Farmers have got the guards called to them for cutting hedges back, which is something too that I hinted at in my conversation with Councillor McClafferty about clarity. Clarity being needed, and there is no clarity. Any questions on anything to do with growing stuff in the garden, in your pots, on your windowsill, on your balcony, in your porch, on your lawn, in your bedding areas? Get in touch. Paul's going to join me later. 086 60 25 000. That's the WhatsApp and text number, or give us a call on 07491 25 000.
Live, on air, online and on the Highland Radio app, this is Highland Radio News.
Good morning with the Highland Radio News at 10 o'clock. I'm Ryan Brawley. Double yellow lines are now in place at Big White Bay in Inishowen. The parking restrictions are along the roadside leading to the beach, meaning motorists are prohibited from parking there. Road users have been urged to take note of the restrictions by Cathaoirleach of Inishowen Municipal District, Councillor Martin Farran. He says keeping the area clear is especially important to ensure emergency vehicles can access the beach when needed.
I asked Donegal County Council last year around September, October time to try to ensure that those yellow, double yellow lines were put down before the summer season come in. And I want to thank them for taking my concerns on board. And those double yellow lines are there. And I would ask the people, the drivers, people to respect that and to ensure that they do not park on those double yellow lines. I've also informed the Gardaí in relation to this matter, as the road section of Donegal County Council has as well. And people that don't respect the double yellow lines will be fined.
The North West Breast Cancer Ball has been postponed. The announcement has come from the organising committee following careful consideration. The committee say the decision was not taken lightly and comes during a period of transition for both the organising team and the breast unit. They've stressed that this is a postponement, not a farewell, and says it looks forward to the ball's return and sharing future plans in due course. Sinn Féin's bill calling for planning to begin for a united Ireland has not received support from the government coalition. Speaking in the Dáil, Taoiseach Micheál Martin said the proposal would do little to achieve its objectives and would represent a return to an approach that has failed repeatedly for the past 100 years. He added that the bill would only distract from urgent work which needs to happen before conversations can take place on Ireland's constitutional future. Donegal TD Padraig McLaughlin has criticised the Taoiseach's response, saying that this bill will be passed in the future.
You say that you're an Irish Republican. You say that you're a United Irelander. Then make the case. Have a plan. That's what nationalism, the SDLP at a conference in recent days, Sinn Féin. This is not about one political party. This is about all the voices of nationalism and United Irelanders saying together, you must have a plan. So Micheál Martin, I ask you to reflect on the words of Charles Stewart Parnell. I ask you to think about what he said all these years ago, because you are that man right now and it needs to change. And if not, you won't be here next year. Your party will remove you and we will come back and this will be passed in due course.
Airgrid has received regulatory approval for an €18.9 billion investment programme to upgrade Ireland's electricity grid up to 2030. The electricity grid operator says it has identified 29 major projects as part of the strategy, including its Powering Up the Northwest programme. The investment aims to strengthen the network and enable the connection of more renewable energy to the grid. The programme will include two new 220 kilovolt transmission circuits across Donegal, Sligo, Leitrim and Roscommon. Gardaí investigating the death of a woman in Killarney are expected to launch a murder investigation later. The body of 43-year-old Jamie Carney was found at her house on the Muckross Road yesterday. Miss Carney was originally from the United States, but had lived in Kerry for a number of years. It's understood Gardaí want to speak to a 28-year-old man known to her, who was seen in Jamie's company on Monday. Irish Independent Southern correspondent Ralph Regal says a formal murder inquiry is likely.
Miss Carney was pronounced dead at the scene and her body is being removed to University Hospital Kerry, where a full post-mortem examination will be conducted by the state pathologist. Now, the Gardaí are saying that the nature of their investigation will be determined by the findings of that post-mortem. However, at this stage, they are preparing for a murder investigation.
Laws requiring insurers to disregard certain cancer medical histories when assessing mortgage protection applications is expected to pass through all stages of the Oireachtas today. The right to be forgotten replaces an existing voluntary code with statutory laws for the first time. The legislation will be sent to President Catherine Connolly to sign once it passes through the Seanad today. Taoiseach Simon Harris says it removes barriers that were previously there.
For far too long, people who've come through cancer have continued to face barriers when they buy a home, when they try to switch a mortgage or provide security for their families, long after their treatment had ended. And that's not right. It's not fair. I committed to changing that. And that's why the law that I will pass today will place a legal obligation on insurers to disregard cancer-related medical histories when assessing mortgage protection applications.
And the weather, cloudy to start, and while generally dry, patches of mist, drizzle and fog will occur too in a light southwesterly breeze. Cloud will linger closer across the west, but sunnier skies elsewhere. Highs of 18 to 26, warmest further east. And that's all for the newsroom for now. We'll be back with headlines at 11 o'clock. The obituary notices this Wednesday morning, July the 8th. The death has taken place of Sheila McNally, Darcy, of Ballindrate, Bunbeg. Her remains will repose at Rorty's Funeral Home, Derrybeg, today from 3 p.m. until 8 p.m, with the rosary at 8 p.m. Removal to the family home after the rosary to repose overnight. House private to family only. Funeral Mass will take place tomorrow at 11 a.m. in the Church of the Sacred Heart, Dunluce. Burial afterwards in Maharagallan Cemetery. The Funeral Mass can be viewed live on Kieran Rorty Funeral Director's Facebook page. The death has taken place of Jim Harley, 1 Melmount Park, Strabane, and formerly of Rossville Street, Derry and Marlborough Avenue, Derry. Reposing at his home today from 11 a.m. Funeral leaving his home on Friday at 9:30 a.m. for Requiem Mass in St Mary's Church, Melmount at 10 a.m. Interment afterwards in Derry City Cemetery. Donations in lieu of flowers, please, to the Foyle Hospice, care of Quigley Funeral Directors. Family time, please, from 10 p.m. to 11 a.m. and on the morning of the funeral. The Requiem Mass can be viewed live via the parish webcam. The death has taken place in Preston, England, of Jim O'Donnell, formerly of Burnfoot, County Donegal. Jim's remains will repose at Clifford Ward Funeral Directors, Corporation Street, Preston. Funeral Mass on Friday morning at 10 o'clock in St Gregory's Catholic Church, Blackpool Road, Preston, followed by interment at Our Lady and St Michael's Church, Alston. The death has occurred of Tommy McNally, 3 Trees, Quigley's Point. Tommy's remains will repose at his home today from 12 noon until 10 p.m. Funeral from there tomorrow morning at 10:15 for 11 a.m. Requiem Mass in St. Columbus Church, Drung, followed by burial in Drung Cemetery. The family home is private, please, on the morning of the funeral. Requiem Mass can be viewed on mcn.live. Family Flowers Only Please donations in lieu, if desired, to the Patients Comfort Fund, Cardonna Community Hospital, care of any family member or Eamon McLaughlin Funeral Director. The death has taken place of Aaron Freel, Lisna Kelly, Buncrana, reposing at his late residence. Funeral from there at 10 a.m. tomorrow morning, going to St Mary's Church, Coghill, for 11 a.m. Requiem Mass, with burial in the adjoining cemetery. Mass can be viewed live on churchservices.tv. Family Flowers Only Please, donations if desired, to Crumlin Children's Hospital, Dublin. House private from 10 p.m. and on the morning of the funeral, please. The death has taken place of Jackie Begley, 217 Ballycommon Estates, Strabane, and formerly of 1 Craigan Terrace, Derry. Mass in St Mary's Church, Millmount at 10 a.m. this morning. Interment afterwards in the adjoining cemetery. The Requiem Mass can be viewed live via the parish webcam. For family information and more details regarding wakes and funerals, please go to highlandradio.com.
Enjoy 2 years of 3 5G home broadband from only €25 a month. Just plug in your router and you're good to go. Switch in store today or visit 3.ie. From €25 per month for eligible 3 customers. Subject to coverage, minimum term, direct debit and annual price increase. 5G subject to location, availability and device. Speeds may vary. See 3.ie. Unbelievable.
Damien Dowd has written that Donegal County Council is to begin repairs to social homes built with defective concrete blocks. Good news, right? Well, the local authorities issued tenders seeking contractors to carry out minor temporary building works in 26 dwellings in Buncrana, and the homes are located in the Dunnanarley, I don't know, I can't read it properly, Parkmore and Schliefschnachter estates, and are mostly two-storey and semi-detached. Not all homes within each estate are included in the programme of works. Contractors will be required to remove and replace corners and gables on the selected homes. So, really, patch-up work, it sounds like. Seems almost unbelievable. Deputy Charles Ward from the 100% Redress Party joins us. We are, as you can imagine, seeking clarity from the council, not to question the reporting. Damien's always on the button. But is this effectively outer leaf, this is crazy, or is this interim work, and if it secures these homes and makes them more comfortable for the residents, it's good news?
It's a combination, Greg. What it is it's patch-up work. It's not outer leaf remediation, as we would have known it. It is going into a home where the block work on the outside of it has deteriorated to the point where it's impacting the family inside, and then they're coming to patch it up.
But this doesn't bode well for those who were hoping to get a new home, does it? Because this would be extensive remediation work, and it feels like it would be kicking the can down a 5 or 10 or 15-year road, perhaps.
Well, no, you see, what's happening here is these homes have deteriorated to the point where it's going to affect the family. The family shouldn't be in these houses in the first place. And what it is they have to come in here and repair these homes because the council don't have anywhere for these families to go. Mm. And the council don't want to be doing this, but they're left with no choice. There's no temporary accommodation. There's nothing there. There's no vast amount of housing for families to move to. And we've got to remember, there's 2,400 homes just on the social side of this disaster.
That's my point, though. Yeah, I know, I understand that. But my point is that clearly they mustn't feel that there is a council house scheme imminent that would see the replacement of these houses. And then obviously that would create the issues with temporary accommodation. But my point is, you know, it sounds like hundreds of thousands of euro is going to be spent to patch up these homes to maintain some sense of livability in the absence of a social housing scheme.
Well, we've been waiting 3 years on a social housing scheme. The council have been waiting for years for it. They've been told it's imminent, but we've got families that are in a desperate situation living in homes of mould and rodents, mice coming through their homes. I've been in these homes, and the council are not wanting to do this, but they have no choice. They have to maintain these homes so that the families can stay in them, because if 50 families came out of them homes tomorrow, there's nowhere for them to go. And it's important to make sure that we make sure that these families are looked after. But we've got to look at the other element of it, is that this is coming out of the council's budget. It's not coming from the government, and they haven't been reimbursed. This is what we're waiting on here. We're waiting on a scheme that will allow the council to move on and the families to move on. They've been put in a terrible position here. And, you know, it's, for example, I'll just give you a quick one from last year. Thomas Sean Devine, my councillor for the 100% Readers Party, put in a motion last year to find out how much was spent. Over 800,000 spent last year that came out of the council's budget. And that means the council are short on other maintenance projects that they need to maintain, waiting on government to reimburse, and still no reimbursement. It's due to failed government policy.
Mm. Is there any concern, though, that, say, for instance, in these estates that we've talked of, if the worst-looking elements of this, the gable walls, the corners of these houses are remediated, that in some way national government might see this as a cheaper fix and this could become the norm and actually defer a proper social housing scheme?
Unfortunately, no, because I'll tell you why. I have to put this in a term here. That building has a terminal cancer on it. That building will have repairs done to certain elements of it, but the building will still deteriorate. Underneath, the foundations will not be good. The footings will be rotten. But what we're doing is a temporary patch-up job, which is unacceptable in any terms. But the government should have a scheme in place. They don't. There's not even temporary accommodation on the horizon. And my worry is what do we do in the years to come as this keeps on going and deteriorating? The government should be helping the local authorities, not hindering them. They're actually putting this on to the local authorities to come out of their budget and not reimbursing them. It's coming down the line. It's wait, as per usual.
The logical thing at this point, because of the throughput and the reality of how long it's going to take to do all of this, is to establish even maybe modular home villages or whatever. I mean, I remember 2 or 3 or 4 years ago, I think it was Councillor Michael McBride suggested this, and I poo-pooed on it to some extent, and I've since corrected the record in relation to that. It seems logical, is that not, that these houses could be reused? There seems to be a resistance to the provision of modular homes to address the crisis here.
Greg, we could go into estates where there's greens and put temporary accommodation and pipe into the services that are there and move a cohort of families into these accommodations, remediate their homes, get their homes rebuilt, get them back in, and then do it again and again and again. And this is the reality and the volume that's coming down the line. This is the only way you're going to do it. I keep on saying it's a humanitarian crisis.
But just in relation to these tenders that have gone out, you've sympathy for the council. They're trying to make these houses livable, but it shouldn't be seen as a solution. In other words, a way for the and I'm not sure you picked up on the point I was trying to make earlier. This should not be seen as something of a solution that could actually delay the government introducing a social housing scheme.
No, Greg, I totally understand where you're coming from. But you're putting a sticking plaster on a gaping wound, and it won't change, unfortunately, because the council have been put into this position by failed government policy. And the decency and the right thing to do is introduce this scheme. They've been saying it's imminent, but we've been waiting 3 years. The end of the day, this is people's lives that are put on hold. They're living in squalor and damp and moulded and insects. Rats, mice, you name it. I've seen it all in these houses. And the fact of the matter is these people are in here paying rent and raising families. And it's not right.
I'm not an engineer, but, you know, that damp and that wetness is within the building and blocking it off and sealing it off. I don't see how it's in the short term going to alleviate many of the problems that you talk of.
Well, you see, Greg, at the moment, what's happening is you've got gaping holes, cracks, rats and mice are going into them. They're infesting the house. They're causing major contamination of water tanks and attics and stuff like this.
So it's dire.
But what you're doing is you're just patching it up. And it's just allowing it. So you've got, for example, if you've got estates within Buncrana, you were talking about earlier on, this will give them a year or two, but the rest of the structure of the building is still failing, and it will still fail. We've seen outer leaf remediation patch-up jobs before. We've seen them up in Remelton there, and it's only a matter of time before that has to go. It's a complete waste of money. The council know that, but they're being put into a position where a sticking plaster on it. They're going to have to put people into hotels and accommodate them in the long run. And this is what we don't want to do. We want to try and come up with a solution for this crisis.
All right. Thanks very much for your time. That's Deputy Charles Ward there of the 100% Redress Party. There's a fascinating story that's been developing over in Britain, and it focuses on Nigel Farage, who makes more headlines in the British press than any elected politician, I would argue, including the Prime Minister, even at his most difficult of times. We're going to have a look at this now with Richard Logue. So, Richard, we had this situation where I think Nigel Farage, who was facing some really serious questions about his finances, thought he had pulled this political stroke of putting himself up against the system. He resigned, or he's trying to resign, his parliamentary seat and saying he will contest any by-election. But as it turns out, he might be up against a dustbin. Before we get into that, his financial woes won't go away. It's like an onion. There's just layers and layers to this. What jumps out at you in some of the coverage of this?
I think what jumps out to me is that this isn't the first by-election that Nigel Farage is going to have to face, because it doesn't cross out the Parliamentary Standards Commission's investigation into him anyway. I think he was hoping that he would come back and show that he has a thumping mandate from the people of Clacton. And there's no doubt he's got a lot of support in Clacton, and I have no doubt in this by-election he will probably win, although I would really love to see Count Binface get elected. And I think if Binface is about the only candidate that's going up against him, you'd be surprised, you know, how many people might actually vote for Binface. Having said that, it is a stroke. He is a wily, wily political operator, and he absolutely knows how to play the system. But I don't think this is his get-out-of-jail-free card, and I just think he's going to look really foolish. I've no doubt he'll actually win the by-election, because you can see from looking at Sky News last night, there's a lot of support for him down there in Clacton.
Of course, and that's because he uses a very successful playbook. You have very extreme views. You attack the system. You attack the media. You try and make out that you're just like a regular Joe, and yous are all being screwed by the system, notwithstanding that he's got five houses and is an incredibly posh gentleman. He's not he's not working class, let's put it to you like that. But it works. And you know, often what we see when we see this replicated around the world, the person that benefits really is the individual. It's they that are swelling their coffers, but they appeal to people who are struggling because they're speaking their language.
We had that with Charlie Haughey in the 70s and 80s, didn't we? I mean, people either hated or adored Charlie, and I think it's a lot of the same with Nigel Farage, certainly with Donald Trump and certainly with Boris Johnson, where, you know, these are people who are immensely privileged and yet somehow managed to get through to the man and woman on the street. And I have to say that his own political skills are outstanding. And yes, it's a great stroke that he's pulled, but I rather suspect evidence is going to catch up with him at some point. And I don't think this is going to be a cure to his problems. Interestingly, Kemi Badenoch said yesterday, when she said the Conservatives weren't going to run against him, she said, well, we're waiting for the real by-election. So this is just a bit of political theatre. And I'm glad that the mainstream political parties are not taking it seriously.
But that also can be spun, and I'm curious as to how effectively you think it might work. This is exactly what he's talking about. All of politics are in cahoots. All of the big parties, even those that are on the right that are contesting directly with his party, they're all coming together to not stand. So this is exactly what he's talking about. There, ladies and gentlemen, is your establishment.
Well, that's fair enough, but I think that in due course is going to catch up with him, and this is not going to push the issue of how he's managed to get these massive personal donations out of the window. And I think he's basically buying himself time. I admire his chutzpah, his brass neck, if you like, for doing this. I don't think he had much other options, really, because it was going on and it was starting to really impact on him, no doubt personally as well, that he's not used to not being adored by the press.
But he is saying he's done absolutely nothing wrong. The 5 million, that's pretty much out there. There was a story broke at the weekend about more money coming his way. The only way this actually backfires on him, though, and the only way there is the real by-election, is if he is found to have broken the rules. And that's not guaranteed at this point.
You're right, it's not. And no doubt a further investigation will show what the actual facts are. And no doubt, because the Parliamentary Standards Commission would be politically independent, they won't be doing it with an axe to grind. They'll be simply saying, well, did you break the rules? Here's your evidence. And this is our findings. So it's all to play for. But we know from a lot of other politicians who play the same kind of playbook is that they're certainly quite busy in the background personally enriching themselves. And the question then is, well, is he going to be found that he was actually corrupt? And if so, there are penalties to be paid.
So obviously the government will have a new leader soon.
Coronation of Andy Burnham, we expect.
Yeah. And he's an interesting character, and this decentralisation to the north, I'm interested to see how that will play out. It seems fascinating to watch from a distance. But, you know, he's going to reinvigorate that section of politics. You've got the face, really, of the right wing of politics facing incredible scrutiny. I don't want to overstate it. There's no shift happening in British politics here, is there?
Yep. No, I don't think so. And I mean, yeah, one of the news items that's dominating the agenda over here at the moment is British travellers being stranded at European airports because of the European entry and exit system. And it's playing exactly what we said when I was involved in the Remain campaign, the amount of chaos and disruption that Brexit is offering. Now, interestingly enough, Andy Burnham got painted into a corner by Wes Streeting a few weeks back, where Streeting was saying he'd fight to get UK back into the EU, and Burnham was forced to issue a statement saying we're not talking about that and we're not making any moves. But yes, there seems to be a bit of pressure, particularly around this time of the year when there's so many UK travellers, my wife included, who's British and has a British passport, sadly not an Irish one yet, but we are working on that. You know, it's about that whole chaos that people are experiencing.
But just in relation to that, Keir Starmer seemed to be edging ever closer to Europe. Andy Burnham, yeah. I mean, obviously we have what he's saying publicly, but he has he will have a term as leader of the government. What is the sense of his desires? Would he like to see? Actually, maybe the UK doesn't have a choice in actually getting closer to back with Europe, given the how the geopolitical landscape has shifted. But what is he saying, if not on the record, having been painted into that corner, but policy-wise, what do you expect from him?
See, the dangerous part is everybody's projecting their political wish lists onto Andy Burnham at the moment, and quite wisely, apart from his statement about devolution down to the north of England, he's actually said relatively little, which is probably a smart move to make. I do think the likely outcome for the UK over the next few years, that's assuming we don't get a reform government in Downing Street, which is not impossible, would be some form of closer alignment with the EU. I don't see rejoining the EU as a full member on the cards, but I do think getting the UK into the customs union and into the single market, which basically means that the travel restrictions are put to bed, and also customs restrictions are put to bed as well, would be a sensible outcome, which would respect the outcome of that referendum, but at the same time, you know, keeps the UK out. I think a longer term benefit would be for the UK to get back in. But the danger is I personally think that reform will ultimately merge with the Conservatives somewhere down the line, and they will have a pretty much a wrecking agenda regarding UK's relationship with Europe.
Right.
So despite the fact that UK is a third country, you know, they are completely determined to break the UK even further, which has implications for Ireland, of course.
Of course it does, yeah. Now, just a word, obviously, on the other candidate, because we have to be fair and balanced here in this by-election, Mr. Binface. And one of his... one of his declarations is that during the term, if he is elected and he wants to be the unified candidate, Mr. Binface said he will deliver at least one social home over the course of his tenure. Now, in fairness, it's nice to hear a politician make a pre-election commitment that's probably keepable.
Realistic.
Yeah, it's probably realistic.
Exactly.
So in that regard, now it's a home, but in that regard, you know, I mean, it's a decent enough pre-election commitment, isn't it?
Well, it is. I mean, he's not stupid. I mean, obviously, if I was in Clacton and I had a vote, I'd be voting for Binface for sure in this election. I'd be really intrigued. It's a bit like, do you remember Kendo Nagasaki, the wrestler back in the 70s? Maybe you're not old enough, Craig.
I know the name.
He finally got on. Yeah, he was a very famous masked wrestler. And when he was finally unmasked, it was like quite an ordinary looking bloke, although he had strange contact lenses in. But anyway, I'm getting off the point. I would be very intrigued on the unlikely event that Binface actually does get elected. He's going to have to take the bin mask off and actually reveal who and what he is as an MP.
I think we all know what he might look like. You know, you can sort of paint the picture in your head. Okay. Listen, thanks very much, as always, for accepting our invite.
My interesting pleasure, times. Greg.
Bye-bye. Richard Logue there, who is a former campaigner with the Labour Party and also campaigned for Reform. Not Reform, sorry, Remain. And keeps a very close eye on all things British politics. Farage will get away with it, says the listener, with his recent stunt. But surely if re-elected, he still has questions to answer. Yes, he's going to, if re-elected, still face two parliamentary inquiries. There was a further one announced following revelations about money from a criminal at the weekend. So I think this what would have seemed clever on paper decision to pitch the public versus the establishment, with the establishment not standing, it leaves that publicity stunt kind of a hassle, because he could find himself on Question Time opposite Binface. Oh no, says a caller on the Late Late Show. Can Ireland not get a better presenter than that goof of Patrick Kilty? He's not a goof. I mean, you might not like him, but he's not a goof. He just is his own presenting style, and you watch or you don't. Good morning, Greg. Again, you talk rubbish. Oh, thank you. Are you saying that because there's a population rise in urban areas but the deaths are on rural roads, that there's no connection? There are road deaths, Greg, i.e. people in cars. Cars can travel outside Dublin, you know, Greg. They hit the rural roads, the crap themselves. No, I could have gone further into it. The majority of people going into urban areas are actually using public transport. I just didn't want to bore you with statistics. They aren't going for day trips. They're not going for day trips to Wexford, Waterford. You will also know yourself, I imagine, if you look very sadly at in Donegal, for an example. If you look at the names and places of residence, that those are the very sadly lost their lives. I'll invite you to have a look at that as well. My point was statistically based, and also based on knowledge and looking through information. So, but I appreciate it, and I don't mind you saying I'm talking rubbish. That's what it's all about, a democracy. Lifford to Letterkenny, the busiest road in East Donegal, and it needs to be prioritised as part of the 10T project, as it's linked to the A5. It's a road that has been overlooked for decades. It's mostly a narrow, windy, dangerous route. Indeed, and that does form part of the 10T. And they are looking for a contract that will move all of these projects at the same time. And it'll be a big contract, so maybe they can do that. Maybe it will be attractive enough. A quick one before the break. Hi, Greg. I was in giving blood at the Radisson Hotel yesterday evening. I have been donating now for over 40 years, and I never saw as few people in there donating as was there yesterday evening. I know the weather is good now, but blood donations are needed every day of the year to keep hospitals running. The clinic is still running today and tomorrow at the Radisson Hotel in Letterkenny, and appointments can be booked by contacting the blood transfusion service. That comes in from Frank Morning. Frank, well done for all of you've contributed over the years. And yes, if you're so inclined, if it is your thing, then there is an opportunity for you to go and give blood. Right, let's get into the garden. Paul McLaughlin, gardener at Ballagher Garden Centre, just below us here at the Mountaintop in Letterkenny, is in situ. Hiya, Paul.
Good morning, Greg.
We caught you just as the weather took an upward turn, and it could be like this for 8, 9, 10 days. So get ready for all of the news stories, by the way, about water shortages, because that's inevitable. So, great weather.
Yes, great weather, finally. It's been a fairly uninspiring summer so far, so it has now, but it's good to see it finally arriving.
Spuds are coming. I was chatting to someone yesterday about, you know, you've talked before, put them in with St. Patrick, take them out at the 12th, they conceded that maybe the climate is changing and it's not possible to do that as much.
Yes.
But a lot of people who had planted them a little bit later, they're coming to fruition now, but there is still danger out there potentially.
Yes, pretty much. It's for the sort of the weather comes good now in the sunshine, that the blight risk will be less, I would say. But the weather we previously had, where it was that sort of muggy, dull weather, it's perfect for the spread of blight. Spores move just better in that kind of weather.
Heat, damp, all that.
Exactly,
kind of stuff.
That's the sort of weather they love.
In terms of the sort of general conditions of gardens and what have you, if you're lucky to have one, and if you do care for it, it's probably looking its best now. So the main advice that you would have is to get out and bloom and enjoy it.
Pretty much, I get the barbecue fired up and go and sit in the garden. Actually, that's kind of what you're working for all year, is to make your garden look good. Mm. So just, it's always nice to take a wee bit of time and sit down and enjoy it.
Is there anything that people might be growing that's coming to fruition now? Do you know, that maybe took inspiration from you when you were saying now's the time to plant?
Yeah, pretty much a lot of stuff. Your salad crops now should be coming to fruition now. Anybody's into sort of jam making, that kind of crack, black currants, red currants.
Are you doing that this year?
I intend to at some stage, okay, but getting around to everything's the one. But gooseberries, all that sort of stuff's all coming in. Strawberries now, it's all flying. So, and hopefully your potatoes, if they're in early enough, should be coming nearly ready at this stage.
Yeah. Tomatoes, is this the time of year where they start needing a little bit more nourishment?
Pretty much. At this stage with your tomatoes, should be feeding them every sort of 10 to 14 days. Round now. They're just currently setting fruit for the most part. The flowers are coming out, so now is the time to keep them moving on.
And, you know, in terms of looking out of the water, looking after your garden and water and trying to conserve water, there are those that have these, and you see them, these water butts, you know, where they shorten the drain pipe in some cases, and they have these big barrels full of delicious fresh water, right? It's not going to rain much to catch water now, but it's something to think about, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Wouldn't it be lovely now to be able to put your bucket or one of those pumps into your own barrel and spread water, knowing you're not straining the public water supply?
Yes, absolutely. You have the idea of you're not putting pressure on the system, I suppose. And the other thing is, if you have a shed or something in the garden, you can actually put the water butt convenient to where you're actually going to water, where somebody, maybe your greenhouse is, if you know what I mean, off the greenhouse roof.
I see some of these cage tanks. I mean, there's lots, obviously, on agricultural land, but... And these are these hold a great deal of water. Are they used domestically much?
Some people would use them domestically, all right. Like I say, if you're lucky enough to have a big garden sort of behind the shed, that sort of stuff, you could put one in. But most of them hold about 1,000 litres of water, and they have the fittings and all the bottoms, so they are very convenient for that.
Yeah, for sure. And there's pressure too for power hosing or whatever you might
do.
Exactly.
I suppose it's important if you are looking into buying one of them, maybe if you can get a food grade one. A lot of them come with like orange juice concentrate, stuff like that. Mm. So obviously if you're... And any doubt about chemicals or anything else?
Yeah, for sure. Watering plants, just to recap, because they're going to be very thirsty now over the next wee while. And to maximise, it's when it's coolest, mornings and evenings, right?
Yes, absolutely. If you do it sort of in the middle of the day, you're in danger of scorching the plants. And you have the idea of the water evaporates away from the plants quite quickly. Mm. So definitely morning or evening if you can help it. And they reckon water quite deeply in the sense that don't give them a wee bit, sort of morning and evening, maybe soak them morning or evening.
Okay, yeah, because the top of the dirt can get very dry and actually almost repel the water.
Exactly. So really it runs off quite quickly.
And at the moment, I need a watering can, because at the moment, the three fantastic pots that we got from you guys, they're wonderful. But I'm doing it with a hose. And a hose feels wasteful, and it also feels like the pressure's too much for the plants.
Yes.
Would you advocate for a watering can over sort of a long hose?
Yes, watering cans tend to
unless you have a spray attachment, obviously.
Yes,
right?
Watering cans tend to be more economical with the water, all right, in the sense of if you have to carry it all the way to the plants, you're sort of more careful, you're not splashing about everywhere. And like you say, the pressure of the water hitting the plants, sometimes the water can be that wee bit more gentle, you know.
And if you're lucky to have pots, on the face of it, they can look great, but it's what lies beneath. You want to try and get as long of them out of them as you can. Obviously, the watering, but the deadheading, feeding, if necessary, etc.
Yeah, just sort of keep up your regular maintenance, all right, just and keep them going that way.
Right, we always get questions on roses.
Yes.
What's the situ at the moment?
Your roses should be looking fairly good at the minute, in the sense it should be fairly full flowers at the minute. Take a wee look at your roses. Once again, like your bedding plants, you keep deadheading away. And now, in the last month or so, the roses have grown quite a bit. So maybe after looking a wee bit out of shape of that, don't be afraid to give them a wee trim.
Are roses as popular as they were, or are they very popular but with a smaller group of people?
Yes, roses tend to be very popular. They're sort of back in fashion at the minute. So they are. They're... Pretty much in the last 5 years, they've really sort of jumped up in popularity again. And there are a lot of different types of roses out there too. Some of them being more expensive. The old English roses were very highly scented and more disease resistant, would be much better at actually do much more in fashion now, even they're a bit more expensive. People are willing to pay for the slightly better ones, you know.
Right, let's get to some questions. Escalona hedging hasn't flared for a few years. What's up?
First question I would ask you, at what point normally hedge like that you'd be trimming it back? At what point of the year did you trim it back? A lot of people would do it either autumn time or springtime. If you do it in the springtime, there's a possibility you cut off the flowers if you clipped it too late. But the other thing would be just the general health of the hedge. I would say give it a feeding with general purpose fertiliser. Maybe clip it in the autumn time rather than the springtime. And hopefully it should do better.
My hydrangeas are very slow to grow. It's planted around 4 years. I have some lovely green leaves right now, but no flowers. What am I doing wrong?
Funny, actually, I would say possibly even the same answer as previously.
Okay.
Maybe you're trimming them back too late in the season, and maybe you're taking the flower buds off them as they're forming, because if the leaves are green in that, they sound like healthy enough plants.
Yeah.
So maybe
they're just not able to mature to the point whereby they...
Yeah, flower up. Buds, so, okay. So possibly, like say, maybe trim them in the autumn rather than the spring.
On the tomatoes, I've noticed curling on some of my tomato plants. Ingredients licensed to YouTube reviews, they said it's a virus. Okay. However, there may be an insect causing the issue, right? They've done their own research. So Mary, one, she's been on YouTube checking out. Her tomatoes are grown in a polytunnel. Why do you think, Paul, some of them are curling?
I suppose the first question there would be, are the curling in still green or are the curling turn yellow? If the curling's still green.
Why do you always answer a question with a question, Paul?
I'm a natural born politician, I suppose. So the fact of the matter is, if they're still green, I would say it was heat damage. You know that real intense heat we had? It was quite sore in tomato plants. If they're starting to turn yellow, I'd say possibly insect damage would be the thing. Turn the leaf upside down and just examine it fairly carefully and see any signs of insect damage. Virus in tomatoes would be unusual. So it would be, I would say it'd be more likely to be the aphids or the heat that done it.
So. Okay, and they're in a polytunnel as well, so...
If any doubt, take a picture and take it into your local garden centre. But my first impression would be heat, and they should snap at it.
Okay, so. I want to make my own compost, but I was wondering if it is better than shop bought. Would ground coffee and eggshells be useful?
Yes, both of them would be very good products for making your own compost. Making your own compost, a lot of people do it. It's quite easy to do, but it can be quite hard to do very well. Sort of, it's a wee bit more complicated than it's made out to be, if you know what I mean. But somewhere here, I'd say the internet's your friend. In terms of YouTube, there are plenty of recipes for making compost and that. But generally, very much worth doing.
Does it smell? Do you have to find the right place?
Not if it's done right. Uh-huh. It's a matter of you get your green material, isn't it? Like your grass cuttings. And you have to have an even mixture of brown materials, which is your eggshells, your coffee grounds. Even branches and stuff. So it's a matter of layering it like that to keep the air moving.
And, I get you. And in terms then of how long it takes?
How long it takes, once again, whatever they tell you on the internet, doubled, much as anything else. So you'd be chatting generally within sort of 6 months to a year. And they're sort of, autumn time is easier to start if you just use a lot of, the leaves that have fallen to make leaf mould would be a good introduction to it. Can be quite easy to do.
I want to plant a tree in my back garden, but a very limited space. Which one should I plant or should I even bother? Now, I can imagine what they're trying to achieve. But
yes.
Is it achievable?
Achievable, definitely. Definitely, I would always advocate planting trees in any sort of situation where it's suitable. Huge variety of trees for all different shapes and sizes out there. If it's a small garden, something like a Japanese maple can be stunning whenever it grows up and gets...
Would you be looking for something that sort of maybe doesn't have all branches can be removed, on the trunk of it so that, you're not losing your line of sights and space in the garden, but you're still getting the foliage down the line?
You can do it two ways. What you're talking about, the sort of traditional lollipop-shaped tree almost would be quite good for certain situations. Or if you look at any tree with the Latin second name fastiget on it, it means actually upright. So it's like a conical tree. It doesn't get wide at all. So like the hornbeam can be trained that way and stuff like that, So now plenty of options there.
And how mature, I presume you can buy quite a mature tree in that situation, can you, if it's replanted? There's a cost going to come with that, obviously.
Yeah, pretty much. A standard 10-foot tree, you're chatting the reason of 40 to 50 euros.
Right, that's,
for someone that size, fairly ready.
An instant impact.
Yeah, pretty much going bigger than you're going. It's all about the time that people spend tending and stuff. So from that stage, the cost can increase quite dramatically.
But still, you'd have a good head start there.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm thinking of planting a few drills of potato. What's the best type to plant for low maintenance? Now, I'm not sure if this is a carryover from a month or two ago or if it's still relevant now, but you can answer that.
Yeah, pretty much for outdoors at the minute, I would say it probably is a bit late. If you had a power tunnel covered area, you could, not so much now, plant them in September, you should have them for Christmas. So you should, but now I would say for outdoors, you're probably too late at this stage.
Is there any way around Letterkenny for getting rid of hedge cuttings and grass?
Yes, there's a couple of places for getting rid of it. You have Bryson Recycling, as down just here down Turnamugger. It's the place you bring your washing machine and stuff like that. I think they take in small bags of.
But there is a cost to that, obviously, because it's not a. It's something that has to be processed.
Yeah, pretty much. Or for bigger amounts, Letterkenny Skip Hire down there do it. And.
I have to say the Betty, the robot lawnmower, has been a revelation in terms of no grass cuttings. Like, you'd wonder where it goes. It's astonishing because previously there would have been a corner of the garden with almost like a mountain of grass. Now it was cut less frequently, obviously, but now the grass is cut really short, but there's no apparent cuttings.
Yes, pretty much. Well, a lot of them robot lawnmowers now almost liquefy the grass as it goes on, and that's used as a fertiliser for keeping the lawn good.
Yeah, it's never been as green.
Yes, very good, very good.
You know, even though it's not a lawn as such, it's just a tightly cut field.
Yeah. But you're happy enough with it so far?
It's great. If you get the right one, it's just the idea of where's all this grass gone? You know, it used to be a problem, and now it's not. And it's not like you're walking through it and you've come in with long grass. It's like three, effectively, in case for people who don't know, it's effectively like three little blades that you put in a cutting knife.
That's like Stanley blades, almost.
Crazy.
And I was creating my brother's one there, too. That's seems to be doing a great job now.
And golf courses are starting to use them now. You know, some very popular golf courses are going to be going down that route. All the fairways cut by robots.
Funny, I was actually down the Letterkenny driving range a few weeks ago and I see they've, like, one, but it goes out and collects the balls.
Yeah.
So,
there's companies too drawing the lines on football pitches. You know, it's all happening. My garden's a bit yellow and white. Any advice on making it greener? Get a lawn, get a robot.
Pretty much. Garden like that, they've been yellow, probably fertiliser, obviously. I assume they're probably chatting with the lawn. So just get a general fairly high nitrogen fertiliser at the minute, put it on, and you possibly need to water it for a wee while if it's going to be dry for the next wee while.
This is sort of an interest. I think the answer to this one's going to be interesting because it really talks about nature and the power of nature. Is there any way to make my strawberries sweeter?
Make your strawberries sweeter. Yes, I would say naturally, sort of the natural thing makes strawberries sweeter, like is sunshine.
But isn't that amazing? It is literally the sun that makes them as
pretty
beautiful
much
as they are.
It brings up the sugars in them or whatever. So I would say if you have your strawberries out there still attached to the plant, sort of bring them to the fore, like put the leaves back behind them, or even maybe snip off a few leaves.
Right, well, I have one on the roses before I must go. How do I get rid of black spots on my rose? And then I said nose. Rose.
Yeah, black spot and roses. You do get commercially available sprays, which I know not everybody would like. Generally for black spot, it's a sort of year-on-year problem. So whenever you cut back your roses in autumn time, it's very important to actually take away the cut-off stuff that you've done. That should stop it affecting it again next year.
All right, okay.
But the other thing is keep the plants well-fed. And generally, like yourself, the healthier you are, the better you're able to fight off.
Your immune system stronger.
Yeah.
Or whatever the plant equivalent is. Paul, as always, thank you very much indeed.
Well, thank you very
much. Paul McLaughlin of Balachdar Garden Centre here at the Mountain Top. If you have any queries, take a picture and go into Balachdar Garden Centre or any of the amazing garden centres we have right across the region. There's fantastic people working in all of them, and they always make time to have a chat as well because they love what they do so much. Hedges and grass. Overgrown hedges, says the listener, are a major problem in my area. I have had close calls myself at a junction, especially with tourists coming to the area. It can be even worse. I think they should just get a man to cut the hedges and bill him. It's not that hard. Another, I'm a walker and the hedges grow onto the footpath. That is a danger, especially if there is a car coming towards you. And especially too if you are visually impaired or in a wheelchair or pushing a pram. Another, I'm a local to Inishowen. I would walk the Inch Wildlife Walkway often. The overgrowth and weeds there are so bad. I acknowledge that it is a wildlife area, but it was so bad There were weeds that were like 5 foot tall. It's not bushes or trees. It's just weeds. Plenty of adults and kids on bikes walk there and they could easily fall off. I actually stopped walking there because it was very overgrown. If this was in any other county, the problem would be solved. I think at this time of the year and with people visiting the area, it needs to be maintained. There seems to be a lot of reasons as to why we can't do it and no one's sort of grabbing the bull by the horns and saying this is what we can do. Greg, the IFA are an arm of the government. When the government negotiate with the IFA on behalf of farmers or the general public, it's just political theatre for the dumbed down masses. There's no political solution to what's going on in Ireland. Well, I mean, no more than SIP2 negotiate for its members that pay into it. The IFA negotiate for its members and they pay a sub. I don't think there's any revelation there. I don't think the IFA have claimed to be advocates for all of rural Ireland. They will first and foremost represent their members, of course. Greg, I've been on to the council about a hedge that is or would have grown over only for the milk lorry coming to collect my milk and neighbouring farmers. Emails, phone calls to the council, zero solution, they say. The public pay road tax and PAYE taxes to pay the council's wages. The council do their work or should do their work and not expect landowners to pay twice. I live next door to my father. We cut back our hedges, grass 3 to 4 times a year, regardless of wildlife rules. Another hedges need to be cut and overhead bushes. Milk lorries are on all back roads collecting milk on remote farms, meeting other vehicles. It's a disaster. It's wrecking our lorries. Farmers won't cut in case they lose the single farm payments. How do we win? We need to get our heads together. See, these are all, and this is why it's fantastic to be able to raise these issues on these programmes, because you can sort of, you know, you get all different sides to the same points. Another caller says, it seems to me that the majority of people committing murders in Ireland are from Eastern Europe. It must be 90% of murders that are caused by foreign nationals. But if you mention it, you're a racist. People feel like they can't say it, even though it's the truth. But it's not the truth. Statistically, it's not the truth. And I'm not here to advocate. I'm just statistically, I know it's not the truth. Go through the papers and check the names. You'll see where they're from. 15% of imprisonments are people that are not Irish, so to speak. 85% are Irish. I'm not picking one side or other, but I'm just saying them's are the truths. Right. Thank you for all of your comments and calls and for listening. We'll be back with you tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. Have a great day and get out there and enjoy the sunshine. And if you're tempted to go to the sea or the lake or the river, please be extra careful because unfortunately this time of year, we do get a little bit excited and maybe neglect safety and one bad decision, the water, you have to respect it. It does not forgive. So make sure you have the upper hand.